Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed psychotherapy, and this is a show where we deal with issues relating to mental health from a more holistic perspective, which means body, mind, and spirit. And the topics that I do weekly on the show range everywhere from the mental health of an individual to relationships, to family, to communities, to groups. And this week is no different. So there has been a major upheaval that has gone on in this country in a lot of ways, and the election's been no different in representing this upheaval. Now, for some people, there is a lot going on in this country that they're very content with and very happy with. For some people, there's a real mixed bag, and for some people, very unhappy. So, if you've listened to the show in the past, you know that myself as a gay man, sometimes I do shows specific to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community. That's basically what today's show is going to be about. But when I say it's specific to the GLBT community, it's impossible to say that these issues are relevant only to that group of people, to gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgenders. So if you're listening and you're hearing those words, you're probably having one of three experiences right now. Either you're feeling totally neutral, or there is a compassionate and energized connection to hearing those words, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, or you've gotten your back up, the hairs on your arms are standing up, you're feeling a great deal of rage that this is even being discussed on the air, and you'll probably want to call in. And so I remind you all that this is a live call-in show, and the number in the Phoenix area is 480-949-1310. That's 480-949-1310. If you're listening via the internet, as I know many of you are, because we've gotten calls from outside the Phoenix area over time, and I get emails from some of you, so please feel free, even though it's a toll call, it's not all that expensive with today's rates. So the number again is 480-949-1310. Now, before I introduce my guest today, I want to give you a little bit of background, and I'm going to read a couple of paragraphs from an article from a Los Angeles magazine called In Los Angeles. And the title of the article is Activists Jumpstart Corps Boycott, But Does Anyone Care? And this gives you a little bit of background. In 1977, Harvey Milk joined a labor boycott of Coors in San Francisco, originally started because the company's alleged unfair labor practices and the use of non-union truck drivers. The coalition forged during that time eventually led to labor support for Milk when he was elected to the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco. Labor ended their boycott when their demands were met, but Gays continued, demanding that the Coors family, quote, stop funding radical right, anti-gay individuals, an organization whose agenda is to destroy us, end quote. It was sentiment with merit. 1977 was also the year that Anita Bryant launched her anti-gay Save Our Children campaign. Reverend Jerry Falwell started the Moral Majority, a term coined by Weyrich, and Joseph Coors helped start the Free Congress Foundation. Jeffrey Coors, Pete Coors' brother, is still on the board of directors. 1977 was also the year that the Adolf Coors Foundation, which focuses on funding the Boy Scouts, some Christian groups, and other charities, spun off a new entity, the Castle Rock Foundation, which focuses on funding policy-making groups such as the Heritage Foundation and the Free Congress Foundation. In 1993, the Heritage Foundation, which generally focuses on issues such as national security, limited government and taxes, advocated making the ban on gays in the military permanent. In a more recent daily briefing, the think tank posited that the Massachusetts court's decision allowing same-sex marriage may be the beginning of the end for America. and said that endorsing gay marriage was the same as endorsing decadence in the name of equality and diversity, end quote. That's the background on a particular boycott and action that has been against the Coors Brewing Company that has gone on for many years. Now, there are people in the gay community that would argue that the Coors Brewing Company has made tremendous strides in giving domestic partnership rights, anti-discrimination policies, and help fund major AIDS initiatives and things like that. So, you know, on face value, we see things that look like Coors is really on board and has helped us, and in some ways they have. So the big question is why recently in the Los Angeles area was there major demonstrations against Coors and against an organization called the WeHo Awards, honoring GLBT people in the community, because Coors had offered financial support. So why, if Coors has done so many good things in the community, why are people still up in arms about it? That is only part of what we're going to be discussing today, but it's an example of, to me, how things are happening up front that may not always appear to be what they appear to be when we see what's going on behind the scenes. Now, that's true with almost anything, whether it's our federal government, local governments, whether it's the businesses that we operate or that we work for, or even in relationships, you know, between partners. There's always hidden agendas, and there's always things that are going on. And that, to me, is a big part of what therapy is about, is helping people get past the unspoken thing and the manipulative agendas. So with all that being said, I want to introduce my guest today, who's been on the show before, and he is actually a pioneer in the field of gay rights. He helped found the Gay and Lesbian Community Services Center in 1971, the Van Ness Recovery House in the Los Angeles area, which is the first residential alcoholism and drug treatment program for gays and lesbians. And he is an author, he's a clinical psychologist, and he's an activist, and actually a very outspoken and very intelligent man, and for some people, extremely controversial. So Don Kilhefner is his name, and Don, I want to thank you for the show. I know you've been a little under the weather, so it's even more important that you're here today, and I'm very grateful that you were able to make it.
Thank you, Stuart. I always enjoy my dialogues with you, so it's a treat for me as well.
Well, thank you. With all that background that you heard, let's start with Coors. But I really, like I told you earlier, want to talk not just about Coors. I want to talk about the bigger picture of what's going on in our country today in terms of what many people see as major setbacks for the rights and privileges that as citizens all of us are entitled to, but somehow people sometimes don't see that when it comes to gay and lesbian people. With all the good things that I mentioned that Coors has done in terms of anti-discrimination things, they were actually one of the first to start doing that. How is it that this boycott is still relevant in your mind?
Well, just a few corrections of the record.
Okay.
You know, Coors Brewing Company was not one of the first people to endorse gay rights.
Okay.
They have fought it every step of the way.
Okay.
Indeed, most people see the Coors family and their foundations as the leaders against the gay rights movement in this country.
Mm-hmm. How so?
Because they, for three generations, they have been funding just about every extreme right-wing organization in this country that has an anti-gay agenda. So that they haven't been in the forefront of gay rights.
Mm-hmm.
What they did do is in Golden, Colorado, they instituted a policy of domestic partnership for gay and lesbian couples. This they did after probably, 400, 500 other corporations in the country had already done that.
Uh-huh.
So they're nowhere in the forefront of any of this.
Okay.
And the important question is, not what did they do around domestic rights, but what are they doing to really destroy a gay and lesbian movement in this country. And they've done a lot on that and very little on gay rights. And they don't have a hidden agenda. Their agenda is open. You just follow the money, and it will tell you what their agenda is.
What do you mean?
What I mean is there are two things here going on. One is a political strategy by the Coors family and its foundations, and the other is a marketing strategy by the Coors Brewing Company. And the marketing strategy would go something like this. We're sorry for what we've done in the past. Everything has changed. Let us be your friend, and we'll give you some money if you'll let us be your friend. And the reason they're having a marketing strategy is because Coors Brewing Company is in the process of a major expansion. Coors historically has been a regional beer west of the Rocky Mountains. It has bought two breweries, one in Canada and one in West Virginia, and it's starting a major drive to make Coors a national beer and expanding its market to Canada and Europe. To be able to do that, it has to give the impression that the Coors boycott is over, which it's not. And there are good reasons to continue boycotting Coors, but it needs to give that impression. So what it's doing very selectively is giving money to gay organizations. So gay organizations will print their logo, print that they're sponsored by Coors. But the Coors family and the Coors Foundation have not changed their agenda one iota. They're trying to make us believe that.
So how do you separate the corporate stance from the family?
You can't.
Okay?
You can't.
There are people that are doing that.
The people who are trying to do it is pure delusion. Let me give you an example. The Coors family runs something called the Adolph Coors Trust, of which the Coors Brewing Company is a part. Every stock, every piece of Class A stock in the Coors Trust is owned by the Coors family. Up until 6 months ago, when he resigned to run for the Senate in Colorado, Peter Coors was the CEO of the Coors Brewing Company. There's no way you could separate the Coors family from the Coors Brewing Company. They're one and the same. Everybody knows that. Well, not everybody,
obviously,
but I would say a large majority of people know that. There have been books written on this. There have been articles written on this. There has been research on this. The evidence there is well documented. So why are gay people, gay apologists for Coors in the community, why are they doing it? It boils down to one thing, Stuart.
What's that?
Money.
Mm-hmm.
Money. They're buying them off. And this is what corporations have a lot of money to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, but to play devil's advocate here a little bit.
Please do. Please do.
And sometimes I'm not always sure I disagree with what I'm about to say. When there are organizations that are starving for funding in the gay community, in the HIV community, and somebody's holding out a check to them, and it's near impossible to get those monies from the federal government, and there's such competition for other money, how can they not say yes to a check from Coors when their budget is screaming for assistance?
When you take a check from Coors, you're selling your soul, and a community can sell its soul as well as an organization can sell its soul.
Mm-hmm.
And once that soul is sold, there's no turning back. And so that there must be other ways for gay and lesbian organizations to raise money other than from the one major homophobe in this country.
Mm-hmm.
There must be other ways. Go to other beer companies.
And
we must not let money rule us in this.
Uh-huh.
I know we live in a society where money rules. Money is the new religion.
Right.
However, we must not succumb to that as a people. Or we're selling out our own rights. We're selling out our own ancestors. We're selling out what the gay liberation movement was about, empowering gay people.
Well, talk about that for a minute, because it really does, in my opinion, I mean, everything that therapy is about empowering the individual, to empower the decisions that they make, to empower the relationships that they're in, to empower them in terms of job focus and career and the things that they do in the world. So when we're talking about empowerment, I mean, that's something that applies to anyone, but when we're talking about empowering a gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender individual, I know that in certain ways the first step is empowerment to self-acceptance and to be being who we are in the world and being able to be public and open about it. But there is such a thing as empowerment as a community.
Right on. Exactly.
And when we talk about empowerment as a community, you know, we're talking about the collective consciousness. And in this country, there's a collective consciousness that is so divided politically, and particularly around the issue, obviously, of GLBT rights. I mean, we've seen 11 states pass amendments to their constitutions forbidding, you know, gay marriage. We've seen, you know, Massachusetts, you know, allowing it, and the world didn't, you know, the sky didn't fall in from it. And we see so much back and forth on this, and we see an election that was, you know, so close by just a few percentage points, and yet, you know, the same thing that happened with, you know, the Gingrich, when there was that, you know, major election where Newt Gingrich seemed to be the leader of a whole new movement, and they got cocky, they got, you know, arrogant about, well, this is what the country wants, or they wouldn't have voted us in. And it's the same thing with this small percentage win, that there's an arrogance going on to say, okay, we're now in power, and we have the rights, and the people chose us to do this. How do we deal with that split collective consciousness when things are so close?
Well, first of all, we don't succumb to their lies. And the same way the Bush-Cheney administration is lying to us on a whole range of issues, from Iraq to the privatization of Social Security. We don't allow that to happen. We do our homework, we analyze these issues, and we talk back. And I think the same thing is true in the gay and lesbian community. We do our homework, and that on course has been done now for 27 years. This boycott has been successfully in operation, and we continue doing that homework. We don't take money from people who are out to destroy everything we've created in the last 40 years. Mm-hmm. Now, historically, we're in a very important junction right now. You and I have grown up in a period for the last 40 years where there was an expansion of gay liberation, an expansion of gay rights. We are now at a period where there is a contraction of gay liberation and the contraction of gay rights. So that means that right now it's particularly difficult, and we must particularly keep our eyes open because we're in a period of retraction. Mm-hmm. And that means that it's important not to give out to our oppressors. For example, if this issue was happening in the Jewish community, it wouldn't be an issue. There would simply be no Jewish organization that would take money from a company that has a well-documented history of anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm.
Why would gay people do it? I think it deals a lot with self-hatred, internalized homophobia. It deals with the fact that in the last election, 23% of gay and lesbian people, self-identified gay and lesbian people, voted for Bush-Cheney.
Yeah.
That there are people in leadership positions in our community that are much closer to the values of Bush and Cheney than they are to the values of, let's say, Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be aware of that. We need to be aware of that history. And as this period of retraction, we need to remember what started this expansion in 1969 was gay liberation. And one of the tenets of gay liberation was never, ever validate your own oppression. People who take money from Coors, validating their own oppression.
Well, going back to the origins, I mean, I've had the same feeling, too. I mean, you know, having been in college in 1969, you know, it was such an energized period, you know, where all of a sudden there was an inner sense of, this is who I am, and this is, you know, there was such an inner sense of freedom, you know, even though it was totally scary and frightening, you know, because it was so new to us. And to be honest with you, I have that same, a similar sense of fear and trepidation going on inside me now because of what you're talking about in terms of this contraction.
Right, there's a retrenchment of gay rights.
Say again?
There's a retrenchment going on.
Yeah.
A fall, going back, yes, absolutely.
And there is that feeling, and yet, you know, there's a fence we're walking on. You know, it's like I said earlier, it's like, you know, with Massachusetts having gay marriage going on, and, you know, my belief is that in 2006, when it is on, you know, one of their ballots, I think it's going to be upheld by the voters because it's the people in Massachusetts that are seeing, after a few years, that, you know, it hasn't affected their marriages if they're heterosexual, and that the, like I said earlier, the sky didn't fall in on Massachusetts because, you know, that, you know, people are who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender are allowed to get married. I think by then there's going to be a sense of normalcy, but we can't be complacent about that because
exactly.
of what's going on everywhere.
And
else.
I think there's a sense of denial in the gay community that this is happening to us
mm-hmm.
because we have been used to a 40-year period of expansion,
mm-hmm.
gay rights expansion. And there are many gay people who are in denial.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what that does psychologically to an individual and to a community.
Totally.
And that's why we need to wake up and break through that denial and say, you know, look, we have a major problem on our hands.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Moyers said it better than anybody I've ever heard, giving a speech in San Francisco recently, where he did an analysis of the extreme right wing in this country. And he said there are 8 wealthy families that largely funded the right wing revolution in this country. Extreme right-wing revolution in this country. And he names the families, and one of them is the Court family through the Castle Rock Foundation. They have been funding these extreme right-wing, largely Republicans, for the last 40 years. And they have worked hard, and they have won a victory, while gay and lesbian people and other people have been asleep. They won it through hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And we as gay and lesbian people have to do the same thing.
Well, you know, there's another part to this. I mean, you're talking about how so many in the GLBT community are asleep and not wanting to get active about this. You know, is it possible that part of that complacency is a fatigue factor of the last 20 years of so much of this being about our community and HIV and AIDS, that it's like there are a lot of people who are tired of fighting.
I think that's
tired.
A cop-out. I think that's a cop-out.
Okay.
Because those people were never involved in the struggle to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So what can they be tired from?
Mm-hmm.
They might be tired from circuit parties.
Mm-hmm.
They might be tired from partying.
Mm-hmm.
But they certainly haven't been involved in the gay rights struggle. I don't think that's the issue. And
okay.
would you say that to a Jewish person?
Mm-hmm.
Look at 4,000 years of Jewish history.
Mm-hmm.
They have been steadfast in terms of taking care of their people
mm-hmm.
and speaking up when there is oppression.
Mm-hmm.
We, as gay people, with 40 years of history around the community,
mm-hmm.
we're tired. The Jews haven't been tired in 4,000 years. We're saying that we as gay people get tired in 40 years? Come on, give me a break.
Okay.
This is generation after generation after generation work here.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say to Martin Luther King, well, Martin Luther King's tired. Malcolm X is tired. W.E.B. Du Bois is tired. Gandhi is tired. Nah. That's
well,
a cop out.
How do you explain, from what I read in the newspaper, when you did the, when there was that demonstration outside the WeHo Awards
right.
in Hollywood,
right.
that a large percentage of the people, and correct me if I'm wrong, because this is what I remember reading in the newspaper, that a large percentage of that were actually gay youth, like 20s.
No, that's not correct.
Okay.
They were adults. They were 30s, 40s, 50s.
Okay.
Gay youth was on the picket line.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that half of the pickets were under 35, under 40.
Mm-hmm.
You get it? No,
yeah.
That was incorrect. Now, you have to remember, within magazine, they've taken money from Coors
mm-hmm.
for the last year.
Right. Running
ads. So this is kind of like asking the Los Angeles Police Department to investigate itself. It doesn't happen.
Well, and yeah, I guess if they're writing articles about this and actually being supportive of what you were doing, they have to kind of clean their own house at the same time.
You got it.
So,
and I might say that Inn has been very open to looking at this issue and examine it and going deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just say that. But, you know, there is that factor going on.
Right. So how much, like, this seems to be right now a, to me, it seems to be a Los Angeles piece of activism and stuff.
No, I would say
this
West
is going
Coast.
On nationally.
I would say West Coast or California.
Okay.
Here in Los Angeles and in San Francisco, not a single bar sells Coors beer.
Uh-huh.
It has been, we've been unified as a community.
And that's still true.
Still true today.
Okay.
And a few years ago, Christopher Street West here in Los Angeles, that puts on the Gay Pride Parade every year, was offered $25,000 by Coors to sponsor it. After we talked to the Christopher Street West Board of Directors and gave them the information, they voted to endorse the boycott. And this is what we find over and over again. When gay and lesbian people and our non-gay supporters have the information, not the Coors Brewing Company marketing handouts, but have the information, they vote to endorse the boycott. The Stonewall Democratic Club in Los Angeles, the largest Democratic club west of the Mississippi, did an extensive research on this issue and endorsed the Coors boycott. Recently, just this year, 2004, the West Hollywood City Council in Los Angeles did a research on the subject and endorsed the Coors boycott. So that when gay and lesbian people and our non-gay allies have the information, it's clear. If you only take the Coors marketing and public relation handout and believe it, there would be no reason to continue the boycott, but it's false.
Mm-hmm.
You get it? So it is an issue today. Now, you raise an interesting point. Because Coors is going national, this boycott needs to now move into a national phase.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish there were those gay and lesbian people who would assume that responsibility. I'm an elder in the community. I should not be carrying this burden. We need adults in our community to take up this and carry it forward. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I definitely do that. I mean,
that generation is not assuming its responsibility in this regard.
Well, and something I got off the internet entitled Coors the Right, quote-unquote, Beer Now, there's something that says here that at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst and at Brandeis University, for example, sales of Coors beer were recently halted.
You got it. When gay people have the information, they know what to do.
So what do you suggest listeners do? I mean, there are people out there listening to the show that are going to hear this and start buying Coors. There are people out there listening to the show that are going to see this as a wake-up call and say, oh, my God, I've been drinking Coors and supporting this.
Right.
You know, so that they're going to end up, you know, I mean, it's going to go both ways because obviously
It's not a 50-50 deal.
Mm-hmm.
It is a, I don't know, 10%, 90% deal. There is a small vocal minority of people in the gay community, largely businessmen who have profit from this, who are Coors apologists. 90%, 80% of the gay community supports this. Let me give you a piece of research information.
Okay.
Several years ago, Christopher Street West, the gay pride organization here in Los Angeles, did a research poll, questionnaire, at their gay pride celebration. People coming into through the gates of the gay pride celebration were given a questionnaire and answering certain questions. One of the questions was, do you support the Coors boycott? 80% of gay and lesbian people attending the gay pride celebration voted in support of the Coors boycott. 80%.
Mm-hmm.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
In research, you get 80% and you say bingo. There's a small minority in our community trying to make us believe, and the Coors Brewing Company is trying to make us believe, that what is happening is not happening. And what is happening is this. Follow the money. Coors Brewing Company sells Coors beer and other products. From the money they generate, they fund something called PACE, Political Action Coors Employees. In the last election, 2004, 87% of their funding went to right-wing Republicans. 87%. That's hurting us. The Cord family makes private donations to these right-wing groups. It's a well-known fact that they're extreme right-wing Republican fundamentalist Christians.
Mm-hmm.
Through another organization called the Castle Rock Foundation, they fund all kinds of people. Jerry Falwell, Phyllis Schlafly, Pat Buchanan. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Why in the world would any gay and lesbian person and our allies, why would they support Coors when Coors is spending millions and millions of dollars to destroy us?
Mm-hmm.
It's a no-brainer.
Well, yes, if you have a brain.
Thank you. The dumbing down of America.
Yes.
No accident.
Yes, I know. Are there other companies that you would put in the same categories as Core?
There is nobody, no other corporation that I know of that is so audacious, so consistent, so devious as the Core family in terms of trying to destroy us.
Mm-hmm.
Setback. I don't know any other corporation.
Any other businesses that you at least know that they still have room for improvement and they're still, I mean, if we look back in history, we look at Disney and we see how homophobic they were, you know, a while back. And, I have a lot of clients, when we talk about mental health issues in a corporation, I can't tell you how many clients over the years I've had that with Disney employees.
Right.
From all levels. I'm talking about the grunt workers who do the storyboarding all the way up to directors and everything else. And consistently, and at this point, it's interesting because it really doesn't have anything to do with a homophobic thing. It has to do with just not caring about the people that are working for you and caring more for the bottom line. So there's a major stress factor at Disney. But there was a time when Disney was considered one of the most homophobic companies to work for.
Right. No, there's been a revolution in terms of corporations, at least on a token level, endorsing domestic partnerships and non-discrimination against gay people.
Mm-hmm.
Fortune magazine ran the results of research maybe 2-3 years ago, and there were over 500 corporations in this country supporting anti-discrimination, policies against gay and lesbian people.
Mm-hmm.
So that has happened at the corporate level.
Right.
Much of that is more against liability than it is about a change in their thinking. But it is movement forward.
So is it possible that these same corporations, because of liability issues, are also behind the scenes shaking up the, you know, funding arenas and giving money to these more anti-gay and homophobic groups?
It could be, and I think it's incumbent of all of us in this society, gay, lesbian, non-gay, to keep a close eye on corporations and their funding policies, because many times there's a difference between what they say and what they do.
Right.
That their lips and their feet do not move in the same direction.
Uh-huh.
A good example of this would be Nike. Nike...
Speaking about moving your feet.
No pun intended. I hadn't thought of that, but thank you. Nike running these factories in Thailand, Indonesia, with child labor, very low salaries. And they denied it all. They said, oh, no, this hasn't happened. We're running it this way. Well, as more and more people did research on it, it was corporate baloney. They are doing what
you mean a corporation lied to us?
Pardon?
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I couldn't resist.
But there's a lot of duplicity when it comes to corporations because they have money. And with their money, they can spin. They can buy time on television. They can buy ads in newspapers. They can spin a policy to make us believe what they're doing is not happening.
Well, it's also
we know this from cigarette
companies
for decades. What?
It's also a matter of celebrity endorsements. A lot of people would think, well, if this person is endorsing this and we think so highly of them, then that company must be really good and do all the right things.
You got it. And we know from tobacco companies for 4 decades they were lying to us
mm-hmm.
for corporate profits. We know in terms of McDonald's and fast food joints today that they're lying to us about the nutritional value of their food. And we as citizens need to be informed, and we need to fight back. Because as gay and lesbian people, we learned in 1969 at the Stonewall Rebellion, if we're going to make advances, we're going to fight back. And I think there's a role for nonviolent fighting back.
Well, and the bottom line to what we're saying here is that it took questioning from individuals and groups and whistleblowers that really, you know, it's like embarrassed a company enough to implement change.
Right.
And unless people are willing to ask the questions, it's not going to happen.
You got it.
You know, and that goes for groups, it goes for individuals, it goes across the board that, you know, unless a company technically is embarrassed enough and their covers are pulled, so to speak, there's no reason for them to invest the time and the money in making those kind of changes.
You got it. You're correct. And if there is a company like the Coors Brewing Company, which is such an egregious, well-documented violator of gay and lesbian rights, if that's there, you use them as an example of what can happen. And the Coors boycott has been successful. I know a gay man whose father was the Coors distributor in San Francisco in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And this gay man, as a 16, 17-year-old, worked in the Coors distributorship. And he said that when the boycott started in 1977 in San Francisco, Coors was the best-selling beer in gay bars.
Mm-hmm.
Within 1 year, it went to zero sales.
Wow.
You get it? Very effective. Historically, a very effective boycott in this country. And boycotts are hard to pull off because it needs research, it needs perseverance, it needs education. But on this issue of the Coors family, the Coors Foundation, and the Coors Brewing Company, it's so clear. They are the leaders in against the gay rights movement in this country, and they have been for 40 years.
Mm-hmm. I think the key word there also is perseverance, because over time there, like I said earlier, in certain ways, you know, after a while people forget why they've been boycotting, and after a while there is, you know, people start assuming, well, I haven't heard much about this lately, so everything must be okay or it must be over.
That's why the Coors family and the Coors Brewing Company is so skillful, because they have set up a media campaign here that is very skillful. It doesn't say the boycott is over. It says we're your friend.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll give you some money to prove it. All you need to do is put our logo on your event. And what that does then, it gives gay and lesbian people the message that the boycott's over, and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
They're very skillful in that way. Peter Coors recently, in an interview, when somebody asked him, I think it was on Meet the Press, when somebody asked him about the contradiction between the Coors family being in the forefront of anti-gay causes in this country and their funding of the International Mr. Leather competition in Chicago, a gay S&M group, Peter Coors says, well, we know this is just business, quote, just business. And we still adhere to conservative principles and are against same-sex marriage. Peter Coors, one of the leaders of the family.
Mm-hmm.
Jeffrey Coors, also a leader in the family, says, AIDS is God's punishment on gay people for their evil and sinful way of life. Why would a gay person buy Coors beer when their leader is saying that? Joseph Coors says, homosexuality is an abomination in the eyes of God. Quote, why would any gay or lesbian person buy a Coors beer and allow themselves to be deceived when the Coors family are making statements like this?
Well, then, you know, and then you get to the point where their liaison office at Coors to the gay and lesbian community was headed for a while by Mary Cheney, which... You know, how, I mean, we all question how she participated in the campaign and the reelection, and a lot of it by just keeping her mouth closed.
You got it. I dated Mary Cheney twice here in Los Angeles.
You did?
Yes. About 3 years ago, the Stonewall Democratic Club, when they were investigating these charges against Coors, had Mary Cheney and I debate the issues.
Wow.
I said to Mary, Mary said, first of all, she said to the audience, there is no member of the Coors family that's involved with the Coors Brewing Company. I said, Mary, the Coors Brewing Company has an executive committee of seven people, and six of the seven people on that committee's last name is Coors. Peter Coors is the CEO of Coors Brewing Company. How could you say that they're not involved?
What'd you say?
Keep your mouth shut. I said, Mary, why don't you tell us about the Castle Rock Foundation and how the Coors family set up the Castle Rock Foundation with millions of dollars and how they have spent millions and millions and millions of dollars funding these extreme right-wing organizations. She wouldn't say a word. They stay away from it.
She wasn't saying anything.
Yes, you got it. They stay away from it because that would blow their whole cover. I debated her in front of the ACLU here in Los Angeles and asked her the same questions, and she just remained silent. Or give some platitude about domestic partnership.
Mm-hmm.
Domestic partnership that affects a handful of people in Golden, Colorado is not the same thing. It does not cancel out the Coors family and their foundations are spending millions and millions and millions of dollars to destroy us.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like keeping quiet runs in the family, like during the vice presidential debate when Dick Cheney was asked about AIDS and the and African-American women.
Right.
And he went silent.
You got it.
No.
Now, what they do is they go silent, or they will lie, or they will tell half-truths.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know from Nazi Germany, half-truths sometimes are more destructive than full-truths.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Or even lies.
So
no, she's a chip off the old block.
Let's look at the other side of this. I think we definitely have made the point about Coors and about the dangers of taking things at face value. There are companies and there are groups in this country that we can hold up as examples of practicing what they preach in a positive way when it comes to backing up GLBT issues and our community.
Right.
Who?
I would say the entertainment industry here in Los Angeles, which I know the most about.
Right.
Sony, Disney, Warner Brothers, I mean, Paramount, you go on and on.
Mm-hmm.
The entertainment industry has been the forefront of changing these laws.
Right.
Largely because of the large numbers of gay and lesbian people who are working in them.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft has been in a leadership position. GE has been, on and on and on, with domestic partnership and anti-discrimination policies.
So what's the statement of someone like Bill Gates? I mean, how is he personally standing out and speaking up?
Bill Gates, I think, is doing incredible work in terms of the funding of the Gates Foundation with trying to eradicate malaria, tuberculosis around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I applaud him of using his millions in a beneficial way to human beings.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's involved with gay rights or not, but he's involved in a progressive way, in a way of social justice in trying to correct problems. He's not working to create more problems for people.
Mm-hmm. And,
you know, and it's across the board. There's been a shift in corporate consciousness, but there's a danger here. And that is that as we move from a popular democracy in this country to a corporate democracy, get that? Popular democracy where we elect leaders to a corporate democracy where corporations, through their spending of money, influences elections and policies and legislatures, etc. We don't know what those corporations will do. We must remember that in Germany and in Italy, during the fascist years of the 30s, major corporations sided with Hitler and Mussolini.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to keep that in mind.
Yeah.
That these corporations, when it is in their corporate interest to do something different, have no qualms about doing it.
Okay. I'm not sure whether we have a caller or not. I thought I was hearing a little voice in my ear.
Well, that might be God speaking to you.
Well, he speaks to me often. I guess not.
Okay.
Am
I making sense?
You're making sense to me. I imagine there are people listening. You know, I mean, with me, you're preaching to the choir, you know, but I imagine that there are people out there listening who are either hearing this stuff for the first time and their mouths are falling open, even if they may lean towards the right, or hearing the stuff for the first time and applauding it.
Got it.
You know, so
I just do reality checks every now and then because just to check, make sure I'm communicating.
Mm-hmm.
Because this seems crystal clear to me, but for some people, it seems like a hard thing for them to get.
Mm-hmm.
And as Dr. Phil keeps saying, some people get it and some people don't.
Right.
Sorry for mentioning your competition.
Say again?
I said sorry for mentioning your competition.
Oh, no, he's not my competition. I actually quite admire him. You know that about a month ago, you know, he does all this family first stuff, and about once a week I actually get to watch his show because of some consulting work that I do, and I get I have a break, and so I get to watch his show once a week in the afternoon, believe it or not. And he actually had, in dealing with problem teenagers and kids, blocking on his name, the Richard Hatch.
Uh-huh.
He had Richard Hatch on, who's a gay man who actually has an adopted son, and he was having a lot of difficulties because of problems with his son. And here he was dealing with family issues in the context of a gay man as a father.
Got it.
And it was, I mean, here you have this middle America, for the most part, probably more conservative, especially since he's a Texan himself, audience, looking at this compassionate gay man who has a reputation in the community, obviously, in the country of actually being kind of like, you know, walking around naked on Survivor and, you know, being very outspoken, to really show this the compassion and the commitment he has towards fatherhood and the fact that he has a very disturbed adopted son and was reaching out for help because this kid needs help. And for Dr. Phil to actually have him on as an example of parenting and fatherhood, I thought was an amazing thing that Dr. Phil did in the middle of an afternoon on an afternoon show to really stand up and demonstrate who parents are.
You got it. You know, many times, and that's part of a historical tradition for us as gay and lesbian people. Many times among Native people, indigenous people, in North and South America and in Africa, that if there were orphan children in the community or children with very serious problems, they went to live with the gay people in the village.
Mm-hmm.
The gay people took them in and raised them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of that tradition. You know, there's the executive director of the largest adoption program here in Southern California said to me recently, he said, you know, I'm so glad when a child goes to a gay or lesbian family because they get the best treatment. They get the best care.
Why do you think that?
I think it's because something that we always have done. Heterosexuals are interested in their own biological children. We are interested in all children and their well-being.
Well, I think there's truth because I think having been closeted and knowing the pain of hiding and the pain of being judged and whatever else that not all of us, but many of us have had to go through in growing
exactly.
up, I think there is a sensitivity and a connectedness that, you know, that we see in children when there's pain.
All of God's children are worthy of respect.
Right.
Well-being, and we know that because of our own experiences. You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I talk a lot about on the show in dealing with a lot of issues about what I call a domestic Cold War that's going on.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the domestic Cold War, meaning that, you know, we used to have an international Cold War. There weren't bombs being dropped, but there were a lot of words
gotcha.
Okay, a lot of words being used and a lot of posturing happening and a lot of underhanded manipulative things going on that really put the world in danger. When I talk about the domestic Cold War, I see the same thing going on, and it's been going on for a long time. I'm just coining a phrase for it.
No, it's exactly correct.
And in dealing with this domestic Cold War, you know, there are a lot of unspoken things and a lot of people that don't see it for what it is. And I think that this is a major example of that sort of thing happening, which is, you know, people choose sides and take a stand and are posturing without stepping back and saying, what is really the right thing in terms of humanity here, of compassion here, of understanding? You know, it's kind of like, if I'm going to be disenfranchised as a human being because I'm a gay man, if I'm going to have written into my constitution something that says I'm limited, just like, you know, blacks before the amendment was put in there, you know, weren't allowed to vote, women weren't allowed to vote.
Apartheid South Africa, first class and second class citizenship.
Right, and they were only counted in the census at a certain point as a percentage of a human being. You know, if that's happening, why should I be paying taxes for a country that is not allowing me full rights?
Well, we do what we've always done. I think Howard Zinn, in his book, The People's History of the United States, must reading for anyone with half a brain in their head, The People's History of the United States, Howard Zinn. And Dr. Zinn says, we do what we've always done. People need to organize. We need to organize. Citizens need to organize. Blocks need to organize. Communities need to organize. And that's how we get social change in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Gay rights were not handed to us. We took them. We claimed them.
Mm-hmm.
We forced it. Black voting rights were not handed to black people. They fought for it. They struggled for it. And they claimed it. And that's what we have to do right now with social justice and other issues that are important to us.
Mm-hmm.
The extreme right wing is doing it. They've worked hard, and they've been successful.
Mm-hmm.
They've taken over a country, and it can be taken back.
Mm-hmm.
American history shows that over and over and over again.
Well, my fear and feeling is that the Christian right wing are trying to make this a Christian fundamentalist republic no different than an Islamic fundamentalist republic of Iran.
Exactly.
In other words, you're going to do it based on our morals and our values and our choices and our decisions, and while the rest of all of you can live here, we're going to be ones calling the shots, and anybody that stands up against us is going to be knocked down.
They're very skillful in manipulating the media, in manipulating public opinion in this country, and we have to become equally skillful in articulating the issues. I have a friend who worked in the Chicago public schools before he went to law school in an elementary school in the black ghetto there. One day, Martin Luther King came to the school, talked to the students, and then talked to the faculty. And when he talked to the faculty, my friend was complaining about no supplies, no books, the administration is asleep, on and on and on. Martin Luther King looked at him in the eye and said, young man, it has always been a struggle. It is a struggle today, and it will always be a struggle tomorrow. If it isn't a struggle, you're doing something wrong. And I think that's the attitude we need to develop. Dr. King was right. We have to organize, and we have to speak back, fight back. The fact that there isn't a national anti-war movement in this country today is a crime, given the fact that the country is split 50-50
mm-hmm.
around this issue. In the 60s and 70s, there was a national anti-Vietnam War movement
right.
that moved the nation to pull out of Vietnam,
right.
that caused voting rights to happen,
mm-hmm.
which caused feminism and gay liberation to have an impact on the society.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't come from people talking over martinis at the Abbey in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
It came from people organizing, articulating the issue, and calling to people's conscience. And by conscience, I mean knowing innately what's the difference between right and wrong.
Well, normally I do the closing thoughts, Don, but you just did it. And again, I know that you've not been feeling well lately, and I really want to thank you for taking the time and having the focus to do what we did today with the show. You're always an inspiration and always a trooper for rights for everyone. It's not just the GLBT community that you fight for, and I really acknowledge that.
I bow in your direction.
Thank you. And so I wish you well, and I wish you a speedy recovery.
Thank you.
And I want to thank all of you for listening. Whether you agreed with what we had to say today or not, feel free to give me your comments at tellthetruthfaster.com. I love hearing from you even when you disagree with me. So this is Stuart Altshuler. I'll be back next week on KXAM in Phoenix with Tell the Truth Faster. Thank you for listening, and have a great weekend.
What?